Basilica still awake. The green-skinned medic was back. The creature was still clad in its dirty hospital garb, the plastic material of its black gloves crackling slightly as it moved up onto the app's dais. It took a while for Polixis to realize what it was doing. He watched with growing surprise as it moved from one sleeping greenskin to the next, one of its grubby syringes in a gloved hand. With a care rare in such beasts, it injected each of the six orcs sprawled about Urgork's throne and Polixis's rack, its ugly face a focused rictus of concentration. Only when the final dose had been administered did it place the syringe carefully back into its satchel and approach the Primaris. Polixis looked down at the hunched creature, but said nothing. Wordlessly, it reached up with its gloved hands and ran them along first his breastplate and then his outstretched left arm, the plastic squeaking slightly as it dragged over the ceramite's white surface. The thing's fingers came to rest on the bulky apparatus of his narthesium, still attached to his left gauntlet. It stood on its tiptoes, squinting as it inspected the device in the near darkness, its claws probing the wicked edges of the chainsaw, the drill bit spike, and the blank screen of the diagnostic panel. Last of all, it touched the cryovials at the rear of the device. It paused, and something approximating a smile split its tusked maw.
"Them lads won't be waking up any time soon," it hissed, one hand still on the narthesium as it gestured with its other back towards the guards lying unmoving across the apse. "Thought I'd come visit you. Compare notes, one doc to another."
Polixis didn't reply. The thing's smile became an angry grimace. It slid a thick, rusting saw blade free from the pockets stitched into its surgical gown, and placed one boot on Polixis's left knee guard, gripping his right pauldron, and using it as a brace to drag itself up to eye level. Its stinking breath engulfed the apothecary, and its mad little eyes were suddenly just inches away.
"You ain't gonna be quiet with me, Humie," it snarled.
The orc pressed its rusting saw against the bare flesh of Polixis's throat, just above his broken gorget seal. The space marine didn't flinch. He met the greenskin's ugly, squinting gaze as it began to force the jagged metal against his trachea, letting out a grunt of effort as it did so. It had clearly never encountered the durametallic coil cables that lent Primaris a layer of subdermal resilience. Its expression became one of confusion and then anger, as the vicious edge of its misappropriated surgical tool only succeeded in drawing the most slender line of blood from the apothecary's bared throat. The greenskin clearly considered putting the weight of both its hands behind the blade, before thinking better of the danger of losing its grip on his armor. Instead, it drew the saw back, glaring, and spoke again.
"What's the point of you, Humie Docs? You save the runty ones. You don't even stitch 'em up with new body bits. Some of the boys you save don't even fight no more after. Why save 'em if they can't fight?"
"Saving the life of a servant of the Emperor is a goal, regardless of whether or not they can still fight," Polixis said, the disgust he felt at the mere presence of the creature forcing the words from his lips. "We are not enslaved to war like you. You are a disgusting breed of beasts, and your concept of healing reflects that."
"So, you saying you got something better to be doing than crumping?"
the doc sneered, baring its small pointy tusks in an approximation of amusement.
"I ain't never heard of beaky boys doing anything other than crumping. What, do you herd squigs when you ain't scrapping?"
Polixis ignored the creature's crude mockery. The smile melted once more from the greenskin's face, its manic mood oscillating dangerously.
"The big boss is well pleased Grimtooth and his git snatched you. He's been looking for one of yous for a long time. I blame that pop-head sly boy for it. He's the one that got all them ideas into the big boss's head. telling him the white beakies would fix him all up. That git, he don't need no fixing. I made him, and he's perfect as is."
The orc's voice had risen steadily through the diatribe. One of the unconscious guards sprawled next to the rack twitched and grunted. The Medicaid froze, still gripping onto Polixis. After a few seconds of silence, it grinned its vile grin once more, speaking again in a sibilant whisper.
"That's why I've been making sure old Sly has been taking his medicine good and proper. Give it another few weeks, and he'll be spewing his guts out. Then we'll see how good his visions are for the boss."
The orc let out a sickly little giggle, the gloved claws of its right hand scraping Polixus's pauldron as it gripped him tighter.
"Your warlord is a freak experiment," Polixis said. "Does it not anger you that your own mad creation is now your master?"
The orc returned its saw blade to Polixis's throat so suddenly it almost lost its grip on his armor.
"You don't speak about that big boss like that,"
it hissed.
"He's the greatest warlord what ever existed."
"And also dying," Polixis added. "Your insane surgeries may have given him life, but how much longer does he have? How much longer before your injections rot his insides?"
"You don't know nothing,"
the orc snarled.
"The big boss has got it in his head that you's gotta fix him up, but he don't need fixing. You understand? You's not gonna say anything to him. I'm his doc, not you."
"Even by the standards of your race, you are a weak and pathetic creature," Polixis said slowly.
"We'll see who's weak after the boss is done with you,"
the orc hissed back, withdrawing its impotent saw blade once more. It dropped back down to the floor and tapped the rusting tool against Polixis's breastplate.
"Remember what I said, Beaky. You don't tell the big boss nothing. If you does, I'll be back when the boys is all asleep again, and we'll see how tough your skin really is."
Chapter 8. The Tombstones. Castor. When they were 3 minutes to the drop zone, Severus slapped his gauntlet against Castor's left pauldron, confirming his glider was ready. Castor had replaced his backpack with one provided by the Reavers during the flight, as dawn had broken out across the wasteland below. Its slightly greater bulk felt cumbersome, and the rest of his armor still had not accepted it as its new power source. The supply reading kept blinking on and off, and occasionally a system overheat warning would appear on the overlay and remain frozen until Castor blink-deleted it. He would make the necessary apologies to his blessed armor later. The pack was required because it incorporated the gravglider fins utilized by the Reavers for silent aerial insertions. He had also removed his robes and vestments, folding and locking them in the little reliquary clamped to the small of his back beneath his backpack. They would only be an encumbrance, both during the aerial drop and in the covert operation to follow. Both the glider backpack and the vestments were points Castor had conceded to Severus before takeoff. The operation would be conducted just as the taciturn sergeant had originally planned, and the chaplain's inclusion in Task Force Marilis would not change that.
30 seconds, crackled the voice of the pilot.
Strix hauled back the Thunderhawk's side hatch, exposing the world scudding past below. The featureless expanse of the ash wastes had given way first to the arid foothills of the tombstones, then the rocky slopes and gullies of the great mountain range itself. The drop zone chosen by Severus was deep in the heart of the mountain range, far from the prying eyes of Xenos patrols or air cover. It would allow them to initially traverse the easier routes along the valley bottoms and sparse waterways that wound between the peaks, before approaching the edge of the city itself under the cover of darkness, just east of the Gorgon's winding, toxic expanse.
"Drop zone reached! Green light!" the pilot's voice clicked.
Phobos was first out, stepping into space without hesitation. Strix followed, then Castor stepped up. For the briefest moment, he was on the edge, jagged yellow slopes and knife-back ridges whipping past beneath him. Then he went over, his ears filled with the roar of the Thunderhawk's engines, sudden weightlessness tugging at his stomach. He forced his body into a descent pattern position, battling the whipping wind and gravity's angry pull. A quick glance at his chronometer, then he triggered his grav glider. The fins engaged, snapping out and locking. Immediately, his descent was slowed, tugged back as his armor absorbed the shock of the arrested plummet. He looked down, taking a few seconds to assess the drop zone. Phobos and Strix were 100 feet below and peeling off to his left, dots of blue against the ochre backdrop of the tombstone's newly dawned majesty. Directly beneath, the blue waters of a nameless mountain tributary glittered, the ribbon winding away through the lower valleys and gorges until it reached the Gorgon. The earth around it provided a rare dash of green amidst the dusty yellows of the arid mountains, clusters of shrubs and small trees hugging the thin strip of fertile soil provided by the tributary. The view, as the sun rose, from the jagged peaks set against the low grey sky to the greener earth directly below, was spectacular. Castor didn't pause to savour it. Severus, dropping 100 feet to his right and further up, had marked a stretch of ground close to the riverbank via their shared visor uplink. Castor locked his own viewfinder into the coordinates and used the rudimentary glider stick attached via the backpack to steer his controlled descent towards it. As he dropped, he caught sight of Dromedas banking round, white streamers inscribing an arc in its wake. The pilot signed off over the vox as he headed back east, the thunderbolts having already peeled away to avoid detection. Castor and the Reavers were alone. The ground rushed up with surprising speed. Phobos impacted first with a brutal thud, followed by Strix, both off in the low undergrowth to Castor's left. For the briefest second, he was worried he would overshoot and come down in the river itself. He pressed hard on the glider stick, speeding his descent as he arched his back and brought himself round to a landing position. He hit the ground near the riverbank with far more force than he intended, whipping through the branches of a clutch of low bushes, and then cracking his right foot against the rocky earth. He skittered along, the veins attached to his backpack clacking, until both boots struck true, and his armor was able to give him enough shock absorbance and balance to run the last few yards. He skidded to a halt just before he hit the embankment. The stream before him was swift and clear, fed by springs further up the mountainside, a far cry from the nightmare toxicity of the Great Gorgon, which the waters would eventually join. He turned, his bolt pistol and Crozius unclamped in an instant as the veins of the glider pack automatically folded away. Nothing stirred in the undergrowth around him. He was alone, lost in what felt like a small paradise, far removed from the choking grey wastelands of the plain below, and all the blood and death and muscle-aching, heart-pounding strain of desperate combat. He snapped out of the moment, barely holding back a curse. His half-botched landing had wasted enough time as it was. He locked Salve Imperata and advanced into the undergrowth, following the location markers of the Reavers on his display. He found them gathered 100 yards further north, crouched around the fuzzing blue projection of a handheld holo display, laid out in the underbrush between them. Severus looked up as Castor approached, eyes cold as ever above his skull mask.
"Congratulations on your landing, Brother Chaplain," he said. If the remark was meant humorously, it didn't show in his voice. "I can't say I recall my last glider insertion," Castor grumbled, kneeling down beside the Reavers. Severus said nothing more to him, pointing instead at the projection. "Shebat Alpha lies to the north. We should be on the approach routes not long after nightfall, and nearing the outskirts by middle dark. That will greatly assist our infiltration. Reports from the wastes indicate another Xenos assault on the ridge was repelled last night. If another doesn't come this afternoon, then it will tonight. All their focus should be eastwards. We follow the bank of the Gorgon once we pick it up and use it to penetrate as deeply as possible. That means submersion, if necessary. All clear?" It was. Strix deactivated the projector and folded it away. Wordlessly, they moved out.
Polixis. Urgork returned with the dawn. The misshapen greenskin approached Polixis as he rose once more from his half-sleep, the Medicaid thing that had come to the apothecary during the night trailing behind. Weak sunlight was filtering in through the basilica's shattered windows, and the orcs filling the place were rousing themselves with bleary grunts and growls. Polixis's guards seemed particularly hard hit. They stirred only sluggishly, unaware of the after-effects of whatever drug had been administered to them the night before. For his own part, Urgork seemed in a fine mood. The beast gave Polixis one of his ugly half-grins as he mounted the app's steps.
"Morning, Doc!" he exclaimed. "Hope you slept good and proper. Got plenty of work to be getting on with today."
He stopped in front of the apothecary, fists balled on his hips, looking the Primaris up and down.
"You's probably thinking I'm going to start crumping you right about now," he said,
his tone verging on conciliatory.
"Crack that big white shell open and start sticking you with all this and that. Maybe more glum zapstick again, or Cogcrusher's big saw. Can't lie to you, Beaky. I'd like to see how much of all that stuff you could take. Maybe later. But for now, we's gonna keep it nice and simple. You'll tell my doc how to fix me up. If you does, I promise I'll chop you quick and hard when the time comes."
The closest greenskins laughed darkly, clearly aware of their warlord's lies. The Medicaid greenskin, hunched over behind Urgork, just glared at Polixis, fingering the handle of one of its saws.
"You are a monstrosity without any right to life," Polixis said. "All the medical science in the galaxy could not extend your existence by a second. Even if it could, I would not tell you of it."
Urgork moved, the motion sudden and violent, the speed belying his deformed body. He snatched Polixis by his hair and slammed his skull back against the rack's frame, snarling in his face.
"You still talking tough, Beaky? Time to change that for good. We'll see how tough you really is soon enough."
The orc stepped back and clicked his fingers at a gaggle of minions clustered around his throne. They scrambled to comply, snatching and tugging at the raggedy hides that had been drawn over whatever was heaped at the throne's base. As they were dragged away, Polixis felt his body surge with a fresh dose of adrenaline and stims. His fists clenched, and his face flushed with rage. Before him lay the remains of Squad Tyro, Ancient Skyrus, and Captain Demeter. Their corpses had been dumped around Urgork's throne like so much trash, their proud battle plate rent and bloodied, frozen in their death throes. Demeter held pride of place at the foot of the throne, slumped over, helmet bowed, as though he'd been greeted by the Emperor in his final moments. His right arm was missing, and his ancient power sword, Justicia, lay discarded in the debris and dried blood at his feet. The sight of his brother's defiled corpses enraged Polixis beyond words. He flung himself against his restraints, but still his own armor resisted him, subverted by the unknowable Xenos technology that had killed its machine spirit.
"Guessing you knew these gits," Urgork said, his voice now low and mocking. "They put up a right proper scrap. Well, some of them did. They all squealed in the end, though. Especially this'un."
The warlord aimed a kick at Demeter, causing the body to slump to one side. Polixis redoubled his efforts, snarling. Urgork just laughed.
"This must be yours too, then," he said,
bending down beside Skyrus's remains and tugging at something caught under the battle plate. A long strip of blue and white silk weave emerged as Urgork dragged at it, accompanied by a ripping sound as a section remained trapped beneath the body.
"You humies love your bits of cloth,"
the orc said, holding it up in one fist for Polixus's benefit. The Primaris found himself looking at the white crest of the chapter, just discernible through the blood and dirt that caked it. He realized he was seeing the ragged remains of the Fulminata's standard, now held in the clutches of the filthy alien.
"I will kill you," Polixus said. "I will carve your head from your shoulders and see your body turned to ash."
"That's the spirit! We got your big tank, too,"
Urgork said, with casual disdain, pointing towards more hides flung across a great, bulky object that had been hauled through a gap, smashed in the basilica's flank.
"Gonna let my big mech tinker with it. Make it bigger, stronger, faster. The usual. And you's gonna see it all, Beaky, unless you help me."
"May the Emperor's burning blade take you and all your vile spore."
"Thought you'd say something like that,"
Urgork said, holding a hand out for one of the pain boy's syringes.
"Don't you worry, though, Biggie boy. We's just getting started. Plenty of time to change your mind."
Castor. It would have taken several days' travel for anyone else to approach from the drop zone to within 15 miles of Shabbat's southern edge. It took the Primaris until nightfall. They moved at the double, following the comparatively easy path taken by the stream as it sought out the Gorgon amidst the crevasses and gullies of the tombstone's depths. Their stamina was barely tested, even without the servos of their armor enhancing their speed and poise over the rugged terrain. Their endurance was unmatched. Following such a bloody battle, even a fellow brother of the Adeptus Astartes would have shown a degree of weariness by late afternoon, and would doubtless have benefited from a pause to maintain efficiency and area awareness. The Primaris needed no such respite. The Reavers were accustomed to such pace and distance when tracking quarry, and for his own part, Castor knew such exertions were well within his own limitations. He was far stockier than the physically lithe Reavers, and his armor and its systems were not as optimized towards long-distance movement as theirs, but he adapted his mind to it, knowing, ultimately, that his heavily enhanced body would follow. He sunk part of his thoughts into a recital of the third teaching of the Master of Sanctity, even as he continued to automatically scan the landscape they passed through, constantly aware of the most optimal pathways, potential ambush points, and areas where they could be observed from. All the while he maintained a determined gait, armor whirring, his system stable now that the battle plate seemed to have finally, grudgingly, accepted its new power source. They picked up the Gorgon towards early evening, as the shadows along the peaks lengthened, and the darkness sitting in the valley bottoms deepened. The stream led them down skittering slopes and short, tumbling waterfalls, until their enhanced hearing detected the rushing of the great river, followed soon after by the toxic stink of its pollution. They found it wending its way between two great scree slopes, its sluggish passage hastened only slightly by the inflow of fresh water from the mountain stream. Its banks were scummed with foam and nameless slurry, and vapors rose from patches of its crusted surface like the fumes of a rotting corpse. The slopes either side of it were barren and dry, offering nothing in the way of concealment.
"We take to the ridge line for now,"
Severus said, indicating the nearest crest,
"and follow it north."
The Primaris mounted the rocky slope, spreading out as they went. The elevation afforded them a better view, both of the valleys below and the peaks that still stood between them and Shabbat. Black smoke was visible climbing from the location of the ruined city, a slow, lazy coil set against the red of the dipping sun. They'd been following the Gorgon for an hour when Severus, on point, 50 yards ahead of the others, detected something. It was a sound bouncing along the gorges and crevasses further northwest, the growl of engines. The Auspex confirmed the noise moments later. There was a column of some sort, moving north towards Shabbat, also running parallel with the Gorgon. As they drew closer, more noise became apparent. Raucous shouts and the occasional thudding burst of gunfire.
"Greenskins," Severus voxed. "One valley across. The Auspex is struggling to get a dedicated fix."
"We go around," Phobos replied.
"If they are moving on Shabbat, they will cut across our route, and if they stop for the night, they will have blocked the most direct path. It would require a substantial detour." "If they're coming up from the south, that needs to be confirmed," Castor interjected. "We were unaware of any route through the mountains sufficient to allow Xenos reinforcement of Shabbat from that direction. Lieutenant Tyrannus needs to know if they are reinforcing the city. We should run reconnaissance on them while we have the opportunity."
Severus was silent for a while, crouched along the ridgeline further ahead, and Castor wondered whether he was struggling with anger at the chaplain's interruption. When he spoke again, however, his voice was as emotionless as ever.
"Perhaps. It depends where they stop for the night. There are several lesser approaches to the city they might use. If their choice carries them out of our path, it would be foolish to divert and risk detection. Besides, we are too deep in among the tombstones now to send a message back to the Fulminata. The communications link has been lost."
"And if the Xenos halt right along our route?"
"Then we improvise."
They moved off once more, keeping to the ridgelines as they wound their way north. The sound of the greenskin column receded as the evening wore on, and they drew away from the Primaris, dropping off the edge of the Auspex's rangefinder. The separation didn't last for long. As darkness fell, lights became visible ahead, the flickering red glow of campfires in the valley adjacent to the route they were following. It seemed the greenskins were set to obstruct them after all, whether they knew it or not. Severus called another halt. He scanned their immediate surroundings, as well as the numbers of the orcs ahead. To the east, a mountain peak rose to a wicked tip, now lost in the darkness, a nigh unassailable pinnacle of jagged, dry stone. Westwards, the Gorgon snaked out, bending around another spine-like promontory. Between them lay a series of narrow, small valleys, ripped from Ikara's earth by age-old geological disruption. They would take them either through or directly past the gorge, where the Xenos column had made their camp.
"At this stage, a detour isn't feasible," Severus said. "According to the readings, the encampment ahead isn't large. I estimate between 70 and 100 Xenoforms, a dozen vehicles, light armor. Infiltrating through their lines offers the best outcome-to-time ratio. Assuming, Chaplain Castor, that you remain at my side at all times."
"I swear it,"
Castor replied, not pausing to question the Reaver's words. Now was no time for churlishness.
"If we press on, we will be amongst Shabbat's slum ruins by dawn, probably before the column is on the move again,"
Severus continued.
"If we're that close to Shabbat, why have the Xenos halted for the night?"
Phobos wondered.
"If they carried on, they'd reach the outskirts before middle dark."
"Fuel efficiency, breakdowns, superstition," Severus said. "Until we get closer, it is impossible to say. I will move up and conduct reconnaissance. Hold this position until I return."
The Reaver sergeant headed off into the darkness once more, servos silent, disappearing even from Castor's auto-sensors almost immediately. He waited, scanning the surrounding darkness for anything untoward, feeling his own heightening sense of anticipation. He suppressed it, refusing to savor the possibilities. If Severus was correct about the numbers of the greenskin encampment, then it was entirely possible that 4 Primaris, especially 3 Reavers and a battle chaplain, would be able to wipe them out without sustaining serious injuries. The desire Castor felt to do just that didn't stem solely from the anger still smoldering in his heart. All Adeptus Astartes were shock troopers first and foremost. They disdained camouflage in favor of proud heraldry that declared their presence to friend and foe alike. They preferred the fury of sudden, violent assaults and lightning frontal attacks that, had they been conducted by lesser troops, would have seemed like suicidal madness. Only in rare cases, as with the Reavers, did they favor covert undertakings and careful infiltration. Castor focused his mind on the Codex. The blessings of the Emperor were not to be squandered by adherence to a single stifling style of warfare. His only objective was to return his brother to the Fulminata, and at the moment infiltration was by far the optimal strategy. Following Severus's lead and maintaining a low profile was improving his chances of reaching Polixis, and giving in to the natural desire to bring vengeful justice to the nearest Xenos would not help either of them. Severus returned 20 minutes later, materializing as rapidly as he had vanished.
"My original scans were correct. I estimate 80 Xenos and counted 9 trucks. It appears several of them have broken down. They have paused for now, but they may depart at any moment, with or without those engines that have failed." "So, do we wait?" Castor asked. "Or press on? If dawn comes and we remain anywhere near here, we run the real risk of being compromised." "I know," Severus said. "Their security is unusually high. I was forced to eliminate 2 Gretchen just to attain an effective Overwatch position. I doubt they will be missed, but the same cannot be said once we start terminating the orcs themselves." "Then let us not concern ourselves with the difficulties of infiltration," Castor said, his anger rising. Every moment they delayed left him feeling as though his blood brother were slipping further and further away. "You have seen them for yourself. They are not numerous. Between us, and with the blessings of the Emperor's wrath, we can slay them all and be underway again within the next half an hour. At this point, any other course of action is a waste of time." "Breaking cover this early into an operation is not what the Codex advises," Severus said. "Nevertheless, it champions flexibility above all else during covert infiltrations, and on this occasion, my instincts agree with your bloody nature, Brother Chaplain. With me."
The 4 Primaris advanced through the night to where the knife-backed ridgeline they'd been following turned sharply east, leaving them on the edge of a rocky promontory overlooking the gorge below. Castor mimicked the Reaver's movements, dropping down onto all 4s and approaching the gorge's edge in a crouch. He was forced to bite back another curse, this time at the faint whirring made by his power armor's servos, ear-achingly loud compared to the perfect silence of the stealth suits worn by the other 3.
"That's far enough," Severus cautioned, switching to his mask's internal vox to hide the sound of his voice.
Castor raised his head slightly, his visor lighting up with target locks as the encampment below came into view. Severus was right. The greenskins were on alert. 2 ramshackle orc trucks had broken down halfway along the gorge and were now in various states of disrepair, greenskin mechanics bellowing at one another as they pulled away wheels and cracked open drive sections. The remaining vehicles in the column had circled in what little space the gorge allowed, and while most of the aliens were now idly scrapping or slumped in their trucks asleep, a few were manning their pintle weapons and peering out into the darkness. Headlights and the flames of a few delusory campfires lit up the rocky space, and Castor realized that there were Gretchen up on the gorge flanks with them, further left and right. None had yet noticed the Ultramarines, almost in their midst, but it would only be a matter of time.
"We shall have to be fast," Severus voxed. "Moving into their lines before striking will be impossible, and we lack the ranged weaponry to begin the assault from the gorge's flanks. Speed and fury shall be our watchwords." "We are the bane of the Xenos," Castor said, "so let us strike them from above. The space between the edge of the gorge and the bottom should be sufficient to allow our gravgliders to engage."
Severus looked towards the point where the cliff above the greenskins was at its highest, assessing their chances. He nodded.
"I believe you are correct, Brother Chaplain. Such an attack would be unorthodox, but it would dramatically reduce the time we were exposed to Xenos fire. It seems we've already got you thinking like a Reaver." "Anything that speeds this up," Castor said, unlocking his Crozius and bolt pistol. "I will take point," Severus said. "After I've eliminated the Gretchen guarding this side of the gorge, hold position along its edge. We strike together."
They moved, keeping back from the edge of the cliff face. Castor, 3rd in line behind Strix, didn't see Severus bring down the diminutive greenskins watching over the camp below, but his hearing detected the clicking sound of a flurry of silenced bolt-pistol shots.
"Stay low," murmured the Reaver.
Custer brought himself once more to the edge of the gorge, the sound of ceramite grating on dirt and stone unbearably loud. He could sense Severus's silent displeasure, and the unwanted attention served to stoke his rage even further. He was the battle chaplain of the Fulminata, not some sneaking assassin. He forced himself to take a breath and calm his thoughts, focusing on the greenskins below. His anger would find a home soon enough.
"On my mark," Severus breathed, his long knife whispering from its sheath.
"Hold," Phobos said, his voice cutting through the tension. "The Auspex is picking up fresh readings."
Severus consulted his own display, wired to his left vambrace. Castor's grip around Salve Imperator tightened fractionally. The desire to release the after-effects of the battle stims and combat adrenaline was almost overwhelming.
"Closing from the east and west," Severus confirmed. "Skirmish formation. They're less than 100 paces from our position. Stay prone."
The Reaver had barely issued the instruction before Castor became aware of figures moving in the darkness out beyond the gorge edge. They were hunched over and furtive, and his night vision picked up heavy wasteland capes drawn close, ash goggles, and the outline of autoguns and las rifles.
"Don't move," Severus murmured,
apparently sensing Castor's tension. The four Primaris remained pressed to the ground on the edge of the gorge, as across from them the new arrivals, over 50 in number, dropped to their bellies and began to crawl forwards to its edge. Below, the greenskins remained oblivious, the rock space resounding with the clang of wrenches and the angry bark and growl of squabbling Xenos. Castor looked from the unsuspecting aliens back towards the figures, definitely human, who were silently taking up firing positions above them.
"We do not compromise our cover," Severus said over the vox. "No matter what happens, you wait for my orders, chaplain."
Castor didn't reply. He could see a heavily robed figure crouched barely 2 dozen paces to his left, priming a clutch of stick grenades. Another was carefully setting up a heavy stubber bipod on a flat rock directly above the 2 broken trucks at the center of the greenskin encampment.
"They're about to discover the Gretchen," Strix said,
meaning the diminutive Xenos guard Severus had silently terminated.
"When they open fire, we move back from the gorge edge, fast and silent," the sergeant replied. "While they're focused on the greenskins, we head for the adjacent valley floor and carry on north. Understood?"
"No," Castor said. "These men are about to attack the Xenos filth. I will not abandon them. An Adeptus Astartes never allows another man to fight his battles for him."
"There are no Imperial forces currently operating in the tombstones," Severus hissed. "They could be anyone. Waste nomads, deserters, renegades. Our only certainty is that they are not operating alongside us. If they have abandoned their faith in the Emperor, then they will recant soon enough," Castor growled. "And you will waste precious time ensuring that. If you have prayed recently, I suggest these men are your answer. Their assault will provide the perfect opportunity for us to carry on north without breaking our own cover. The faster we reach Shabbat, the faster we reach your blood brother. Remember why you are here, Chaplain Castor. Remember the blood of Ajax."
As though to punctuate the Reaver's words, a detonation tore through the gorge below, its thunderclap rebounding from the cliff faces and juddering through the stones beneath Castor. The human attacker had thrown his stick grenade bundle. The night lit up. Lasbolts and hard rounds rained down like a sudden hailstorm on the greenskin camp, blazing from both sides of the gorge. Castor saw dozens of Xenos go down within seconds, twitching back and forth as they were struck from multiple angles, riddled with bullets and las. Others dived for cover within or beneath their vehicles, or snatched up sluggers and shooters, blazing away into the night.
"Move!"
Severus ordered tersely, already backing away from the edge of the gorge. Castor forced himself to follow, teeth gritted. To be denied righteous combat was one thing, but to actively avoid it when men were risking their lives to put down Xenos' filth was nigh unbearable. He sought out the words of the Catechism of Limitation as he moved after Severus, keeping low, the sounds of power armor crunching off dry stone and grit lost in the sudden thunder of the ambush. None of the Primaris made it far. Castor had barely gone a dozen yards before he picked up a voice over the sounds of the firefight, detected by his Lyman's ear.
"Contact! Right! By the cliff edge!"
"They've seen us," he said,
just before the first lasbolt cracked into a boulder half a dozen yards to his left, scorching a black mark in the yellow stone. More shots followed, las and hard rounds both, snapping at the earth around the Primaris. In the darkness, it was impossible to say whether the humans had mistaken their bulky forms for orcs, or whether they truly were renegades. Regardless, it could only be a matter of seconds before they began priming grenades, or worse, before Severus and his death brethren began shooting back.
"Enough!"
Castor barked. He stood. Shots filled the air around him, striking and sparking from his black battle plate. He ignored them. In one fist, he raised Salve Imperator and activated it. With a crack of discharged power, lightning wreathed the skull-tipped mace and illuminated the Primaris, towering in all his grim, power-armored might.
"In the name of the immortal Emperor of Mankind, cease fire!"
His words boomed out, amplified by his vox vocalizer, resounding over the reports of gunfire and the crack of ricochets. The shooting stopped almost immediately.
"Stop firing!" he heard one man screaming. "For throne's sake, cease fire!" "Soldiers of the Emperor,"
Castor intoned, lowering Salve Imperator so it pointed towards the gorge.
"Strike them down!"
Chapter 9. Anthropophagite. Polixis. The beast left Polixis to struggle for much of the day, the corpses of his battle brothers laid out before him. Only with the onset of night did it summon more of its minions, among them a clanking greenskin that seemed to be composed of crude rusting bionics more than green flesh. The thing was lugging a heavy industrial saw in its wake, and attended by a train of hook-nosed Gretchen hefting spanners and other work tools.
"This is my big mech,"
Urgork said to Polixis. He'd witnessed the warlord take 3 injections from its Medicae throughout the day, each time apparently reliant on the foul concoction to arrest the seizures that would intermittently grip it. A part of the apothecary felt a morbid sense of fascination towards the unnatural alien and his apparently numerous afflictions. There was no medical precedent for the existence of such a freak experiment, and yet here it was, seemingly kept alive as much by its own schizophrenic willpower as by the dark potions of its creator.
"Cogcrusher here likes all your beaky gubbins," Urgork was saying,
indicating to the greenskin mechanic that was peering at Polixis from behind grubby bionic lenses.
"All them armor bits and daca, and especially your big truck. Told him he couldn't tinker with it all he wants, once I've got you helping me."
Polixis swallowed his retort, knowing it was pointless. The idea that the Xenos wanted to experiment on such blessed armor was as sickening as the thought of them defiling the flesh of the dead Primaris. Urgork waved the thing he'd addressed as Cogcrusher over to the remains of Demeter, Skyrus, and Squad Tyro. The thing's Gretchen slaves scurried and scampered over the fallen Primaris, grimy little hands tugging at armor plates and helmets, squabbling among themselves. Urgork seemed to grow impatient as his mechanic prevaricated over the bodies, apparently overwhelmed by the choices on display.
"Cogcrusher!"
the warlord barked, singling out the body of one of the aggressors, Brother Uxis, with a claw.
"Cut that git open!"
The mechanic hefted its heavy saw, its augmented limbs grating, and the basilica filled with an ear-splitting scream as the wicked blade seared into Brother Uxis's gravis armor. Polixis gritted his teeth so hard that the metallic tang of blood filled his mouth,
trying not to think about the brutal defilement of the hallowed battleplate. Trying not to think about what the greenskins were going to do when they finally cracked it open. Fat sparks burst across the flagstones, ceramite, then plasteel, then adamantium, giving way with a slow, grim reluctance. It took long minutes to break the will of the gravis plate. The Gretchen scurried about the feet of their mechanical master, tugging away the scraps of twisted blue metal hacked apart by the saw's relentless work. Eventually, Uxis was reduced to his under-armor and black carapace, the greenskins tugging away dermal nodes and connector ports with gleeful, savage abandon. The Ultramarine's dead flesh was left exposed, his breastplate cleft in half, his helmet dragged off, his heraldry split and defiled.
"That's enough!"
Urgork snapped, pointing once more at the body.
"Bring it over here!"
A trio of orcs dragged the heavy corpse and what little remained of its armor before Polixus's rack, grating it over the flagstones. The apothecary found himself looking down into Uxis's dead eyes. Even in death, the slain aggressor appeared stoic, jaw set, expression unwavering. He looked away.
"Squeamish, is yer?"
Urgork demanded, planting a boot on Uxis's torso. The orc's hobnails dug into the pale flesh of the ultramarine's chest. Polixus met the thing's gaze, his eyes burning.
"That's more like it,"
Urgork snarled.
"That's the face of a proper Yumi git looking for a scrap. Never understood why yous get so angry sometimes. Us lads just want a good fight. No point getting all worked up about it. Still, here we is. Doc, get over here!"
The orc medicae scampered to its master's side. It was grinning up at Polixus in its leering manner, clearly delighting in what was about to take place. Polixus felt his anger mount as he began to realize what was happening.
"You is about to witness a medical first,"
Urgork said proudly, planting his bald fists on his hips.
"Doc Grok here is about to perform the first ever removative surgery on a Yumi Beaky in front of another Yumi Beaky. Doc, we await your pleasure."
The warlord took his boot off Uxis and stepped away. The medicaid crouched over the corpse like some sort of hideous carrion creature. After a brief inspection, it laid out a leather strip on the floor, scattered with various rusting blades. The vile parody of the surgeon's fine art turned Polixus's stomach, and he found himself straining once more at his bonds. The servos shuddered slightly, grating, but going no further. None of the greenskins seemed to notice. They were all staring with bated excitement at their hunched-over pain boy. The orc's fingers moved over the instruments of its supposed profession, apparently pondering which one it wanted to employ first. Eventually, it snatched up what appeared to be a small, rusting power saw. The buzz of the cutting tool, like a miniature version of the industrial rotor used by the orc mechanic, filled Polixus's ears.
"Stop!"
He realized he had barked the word involuntarily. The greenskin medicae looked up, clearly startled, saw still in its hand. Urgork emitted a hacking laugh that devolved into another bout of coughing. He inhaled noisily and spat before his grin returned.
"Can't stop the march of science, Beaky boy. The good doc here has been itching to carve up these gubbins for days now. Wouldn't be right or proper for him or his patients to cancel the operation now. It'd take something big to do that. Say, maybe," he paused, "you giving me what I want. Tell me your secrets, Beaky. Tell me how I can be free of all this."
The orc jabbed his claw in the direction of the medicae's syringe satchel. Polixus stayed silent. Inwardly, he was snarling a string of enraged blasphemies that would have risked a blow from Castor.
He damned himself for his own weakness, damned himself for being drawn by Urgork's defilement. Brother Uxis would not have wanted him to yield, no matter what cruelties were heaped on his corpse. He would not converse with the Xenos, would not justify its existence, even with words of hatred.
"Lost your tongue again?" Urgork grunted, looking disappointed. "Fine, then. Have it your way." "Grok!"
The smaller greenskin's expression was the opposite of its master's. Smiling manically, it raised its saw blade.
"Gonna need this to chop through that thick bone stuff,"
the Xenos said, its tone full of relish. It cranked the saw to maximum output and pressed it down against Uxis's bare chest. For a second, the flesh of the Primaris resisted. Then it gave way beneath the buzzing blade, and blood, dark with age, splattered along the saw's edge, hitting the orc's face and stained overalls. The alien licked the blood from its lips, grinning wickedly, but its joyous expression turned to a strained rictus as it put all of its scrawny strength behind the cutting tool, pressing down as it sought to split the Primaris's toughened rib bone. There was a hideous, juddering shriek as rusting metal fought through the breastplate beneath the black carapace, and Polixis thought the saw was going to shatter. Suddenly, there was a sickening crunch. Polixis knew he had just heard Uxis's fused ribs caving in.
"Been wondering what makes you beakies so big and strong," Urgul growled at Polixis, eyes on the apothecary, while his minion continued to crack the rib cavity open. "And we reckon we's found what it is."
The Medicae orc let out a yelp of satisfaction and dragged its saw back out of the Space Marine's torso, deactivating the tool as blood and viscera sprayed from it. It swapped it for a flat planing knife, not unlike the two long blades carried by Urgork. As the greenskin began to slice back the aggressor's flesh, it used wicked meat hooks to further widen the chest cavity incision. Polixis realized just what it was doing. It was carving out one of the Space Marine's twin hearts. The Medicae abandoned its blade when most of Uxis's chest had been reduced to raw, flensed muscle. The wound running along his breastbone was now gaping. The orc took up a smaller, hook-tipped knife, clumsily cuffing blood and spittle from its mouth as it crouched over the ultramarine. Polixis tried to put his mind elsewhere, to think about anything other than what was about to happen. Anything to take his mind off the fury that felt as though it were going to burst his own hearts and tear his muscles apart. The orc reached into the raw cavity with its knife and began to cut. It was not the sickening, straining work of the bone saw or the cruel slicing of the flensing blade. The little nicks were almost incongruous, but they were the most sacrilegious cuts of all. Eventually, warty tongue jutting from between its tusks in concentration, the greenskin plunged its grubby glove down into the incision. There was a squelching sound before it ripped its hand back out, holding something aloft.
"I got it, boss,"
it said excitedly to Urgork. The warlord held out his hand to receive his underling's trophy, before turning to Polixis and holding it up, the dripping, glistening mass of muscle and flesh that was Uxis's primary heart.
"I told you, Beaky, I knows a thing or two about you. We seen how hard you fight to get bits out of your boys when they gets chopped. I knows how much you gits in a white armour want them."
The orc held the torn heart close to Polixis's face, grinning, his yellow eyes full of madness.
"Don't know why you needs it so bad. Don't care, either. All that matters to me is that it matters to you." "You know nothing,"
Polixis snarled.
"We's been watching you, lads,"
the warlord said, his eyes still on Polixis as he turned the grisly organ over in his palm. The Medicae's crude butchery had only removed part of it.
"Besides, you think you's the first beaky I've had strapped up here? He wouldn't tell as much at first, but then we hooked old Sly Boy up to his brain. We can do the same to you, but for now, I just want you to know what I know. What I can do.
As the greenskin finished speaking, he clenched his fist. There was a wet squelch, and Urgork opened his hand once again to reveal the crushed remains of the heart spread against his palm.
"The Emperor is with me," Polixis began to say, seeking out the words of the rite of intonation, familiar to all Ultramarines apothecaries, in an effort to suppress his fury.
"He is around me and within me, in my words and in my heart, in my deeds and in my sinews."
"Angry git, aren't you?"
Urgork mocked, taking a step closer, so that the Orc and the Primaris were only separated by a narrow, charged space.
"Once I gets you going, anyway, it's good to see that sometimes. You and I, Beaky, we ain't so different."
"You are an abomination," Polixis spat.
"Big word,"
Urgork said, nodding slowly.
"Abomination! I knows it, though. I've heard it plenty of times before. Other big Yumi words, too. Monstrosity. Aberrance. I understands them, Beaky. It's 'cause I'm different from these other gits."
The beast paused to encompass the rest of the basilica and its greenskin occupiers, speaking as though none of them could hear him.
"I'm bigger and better than them, so they call me things. Even some of the lads used to say things. Freak, dead boy, stitchy skin. Then I crumped them, and they stopped saying those words. I'm bigger and I'm better, because I was made to be. And that's how we is the same, Beaky."
"You are an insane Xenos monster. We have nothing in common."
"You was made to be the best,"
Urgul continued, as though Polixis hadn't spoken.
"You was put together. You didn't grow like the lads or normal Yumis. You was designed, made to be a boss, like me. That's why I want you, Beaky. That's why you is here. Even more than the smaller Beaky boys. You was made to beat everyone else. I reckon the secret to that is here and here."
The Orc pressed a claw against Polixus's breastplate, and then his throat, singling out his progenoids. The Space Marine shuddered with revulsion, turning his face away from the monster and its hideous gaze.
"There is nothing the organs of the Adeptus Astartes can do to preserve your rotting flesh," he said. "Cut apart all these bodies, do likewise to me, and you will still be beyond salvation. You were born a monster, and you will die one."
"We'll see,"
Urgork said slowly. Then, without warning, snatched Polixis by the jaw, yanking his head back round. He tried to resist, but, bound as he was, there was nothing he could do to fight the warlord's nightmarish strength. The Orc forced a claw into his mouth, holding his jaw in a vice grip, threatening to crush bone and break his teeth. As Polixis struggled to draw breath while simultaneously biting down on the foul digit, Urgork gripped the torn remains of Uxis's heart in his other hand and rammed it against the Primaris's mouth. Polixis's eyes widened with horror as he realized what was happening. He tried to close his jaw, tried to spit out the alien's filthy fingers, tried to tear them off, but the stinking, unyielding grip of the brutish creature was irresistible. He tasted the coppery tang of blood, followed by a greasy, choking morass.
"Gonna take your medicine, Beaky,"
Urgork snarled, thick strings of drool dangling from his tusks, his butcher's breath engulfing the apothecary. The flesh of the heart made Polixis heave, but he could not halt its passage, couldn't stop the stifling, horrifying realization of what was happening. It slid thickly down his throat until it passed the point of no return. He found his breath,
and screamed with outrage. But it did no good. Urgork let go and stepped back, allowing Polixus's head to fall. The Primaris remained